Okay, for the last talk of the day, please welcome Serge, who's going to present us his Python project. Thank you very much.
So hi, folks. Before we start, this is not a talk about generic Python. It's a talk about compiling Python for scientific computing. So it's more about Python science. And that topic has always been, and still is, quite a mystery for me, because I've been working on HPC for a while, and performance has always been the most important thing in that field. And Python is not exactly known for being super performant, even though the NumPy library provides a good abstraction for reasonable performance. It still amazed me that it has so successfully replaced Fortran, and not only for prototyping. But still, that's the case, and it opens a very interesting window of trying to fight against Python performance. So writing compilers for scientific Python is kind of a niche, but a niche where a lot of people try to live, and some of them died doing so. I mean, at least the project did. And that's the whole story of this talk. It's more like going through the history of compiling Python and what kind of outcome we get, rather than explaining how to do that. I do like speaking about how to do that, but that's, if you want to speak with me personally, that's okay. So I'm Serge. I've been developing the Python compiler for 7 years, which is also the age of my youngest daughter, so I say hello to her. But I've been giving much more time to her than to this project, but still, 7 years for a personal project, which is used, well, at least it's downloaded by thousands of people each week. It's kind of a success, and I'm going to speak about that. So that's probably the only example of Python I'm going to show you, because it's not really a technical talk. But basically, Python takes Python modules as inputs. These modules are free of any type annotation, like the Python type annotation or the Cython type annotation. You only describe the entry points of your modules, the function you want your users to use, and you describe the typing using comments, which means that your code is totally backward compatible with pure Python. You don't engage too much when trying to use it using that compiler. And you basically just run the Python compiler on this Python code. You can pass extra optimization flags, just like you would do with GCC or Clang, and Python understands most of them. You can generate vectorized code using SCMD instruction, parallel code using OpenMP flags, and Python does support explicit OpenMP parallelization. So it basically does the job. One thing that is not worthy is this kernel is relatively high level. There is no explicit loops. You don't explicitly write the summation or the iteration over the array. That's what scientific users actually write. They don't need to rewrite that code so that it can be compiled for performance. But that's what we have now, but we did not have that at the beginning. There is this Cython project, which basically allows users to write in a mixture of Python and C code. And if they take this extra step, this extra non-backward compatible step, they are paid with extra performance. And it's a very nice project, both from a theoretical point of view and a practical point of view. The thing I really like about the Cython project is, first, it's used by a lot of very important projects. So they made the right choice because they are used. That's the ultimate score. You can convert your Python code to Cython code gradually. You add type annotation, and each time you go further into the C word, the more performance you get. And it's not an all-or-nothing process, so that's a very good thing. And they have very good both error reporting, which is challenging for compilers that translate Python to C and then compile that. And they also provide good annotation to check what gets converted to C and what remains in the Python world. So both from a user experience and a theoretical background, it's a very nice project. You also have PyPy, which supports the full, which aims at supporting the full Python language. It used to be only for Python 2, but they also now support Python 3. And their theoretical foundations are, I don't understand what happens there. Also, I have a PhD in compiling. So they are really good at what they are doing, and they implemented a lot of technology with respect to JITting, advanced stuff that's very nice. But they have limited support for NumPy, and one of the reasons why they have this limited support is that NumPy is basically a Python wrapper around native C extensions, and that's a very strong boundary for any optimizing compiler. And that's something I'm going to stress a bit during the talk. So not much adoption in the scientific community, but for all the other aspects, a very good project. And there's also Numba. So it's a JITting compiler, which from a user experience is nice. It's based on LLVM, so it has strong engineering background. It's retargetable to different architectures. That's very nice. It's funded by industrial level company. So they even manage to, I don't know if that's the real reason, but from my point of view, it's difficult to distribute binary stuff in Python. But they manage to create a new package manager, Conda, and have it adopted by the scientific community. And so they can bundle native stuff without any issue, which is not the case for other projects. So that's really the straight approach to solving the dependency problem. You create a new package manager that works for your problem, and you have the whole community adopt it, and it did work. So very kudos to them. The only thing I'm not very fond of is that you need to write your code explicitly. And that's the same problem with Siphon. If you want performance, you write your explicit loops. And as a scientific, I don't like that. I want to express my problem in terms of high-level primitives, and NumPy provides that. And Numba is not that much friendly with respect to that. So that's a total, big total of four compilers. Each made different technical choice, but also a different approach to Python or the how Python should be used. And I find it interesting to go through each year and what happens historically. For those people who are not interested in compiling Python, first, you may wonder why you are here, but if you still want to stay, I've cherry-picked a few commits in different projects, and you need to guess which compiler was related to that commit. So, back in the days, which compiler could that be? Move the PyPy trunk into its own top level. Okay, so the first compiler out of the four was PyPy, and it's itself based on another project, which was Pyrex, if I recall correctly. No, it was Psycho. So it's a very old project that was Python 2 only, and it's already 15 years ago, right? So 15 years ago, someone tried to optimize Python, and it's still a work in progress, which gives you a big hint about how difficult this it is. And it's probably not a problem of the engineers trying to do that, but probably a problem of the whole Python language and ecosystem. So it's a difficult task. 3 years later, official Pyrex version. So that's the beginning of Siphon. Okay, Siphon is an evolution of the Pyrex project, as well as PyPy is an evolution as of the Psycho project. So there is no wonder why Siphon is so widely used. It got good answers at the right time. So that's the first idea. If you've got a good idea, implement it and have people use it when there is nobody else that can compete with your ideas. It's always easier when you're the first one. That's 6 years later, the root commit in PyTran. So that's a big gap. And the very same year, I tried to present my work in a French conference. I was speaking in French, which is always easier for us French people. And there was a good thing. I met Victor Stiner, who is a core Python developer, but also a lot of issues. I was very happy of my project, and I was able to translate a large support of the Python language to C++, but I had no NumPy support at all. And so the problem was nobody was interested in what I was doing, because I did not have mixed mode like Cython, and I could not improve scientific computation. And the problem was I did not think about my users at all. I just thought, whoa, C++ 11 is getting close to Python syntactically. It would be fun to translate one to the other, which was true. It was fun, but nobody cared. So it was totally a pet project, and no one would use it at all because Cython was doing a better job and with a much wider extent. But technically, it was interesting, so I went on. And at the same time, there was the first commit in Numba. And Zeus, Travis Oliphant was also the main developer of NumPy back in the day. And he knew that NumPy was where you could develop a DSL embedded into Python for scientific computing. And I did not knew that. But he did, and so Numba got a lot of momentum thanks to that core idea. If you want to compile a subset of Python, it has to be scientific Python, and you need to support NumPy, at least NumPy arrays, otherwise you're doomed. So a good point for people trying to develop a compiler for Python: don't develop a compiler for Python, but for a subset of Python which is actually used by a large enough community. So basically, write a DSL for your domain, and then you've got a chance to get it accepted. So I don't remember how it happened, but I probably submitted to SciPy 1 year after started PyTran. And so it's in the US, and I did receive a grant from the SciPy conference to present my work. And I have to say that that was really a marvelous experience. I only went to a scientific conference before, like a real science with PhD people and not engineering science like the one like SciPy. And people were very friendly. They helped me a lot understanding what were the shortcomings of my project, and with a very inclusive approach, not stating, okay, you made that mistake and that mistake, come back in 2 years, but rather than, okay, that's very interesting, you've got promising results, let's talk about that subject, maybe we can find a way to compare the different compilers, because Numba was already a thing at that time, and there was also another compiler, Parakit, that got presented during a lightning talk at the same conference. And instead of saying, okay, all these people, you're going to compete, they say, okay, let's write a benchmark suite to compare the result of the different compiler so that we can all grow together as a community. And that's something I really appreciate with the Python community as a whole. Very inclusive, and you don't judge people in that community. It's probably less technical, and that's something to take into account. I do present a lot in C++ conference, and everything is about technical level, speaking about the language and the internal of the language, and everybody is having fun. And when you present about Python, you don't speak about the internals of Python that much. You're actually using Python to do stuff. That's really a different mindset in terms of community, and I really felt welcome at SciPy. But I also realized that Numba was growing and PyCharm wasn't. But, well, I'm not leading a company or whatever, so I don't care. As long as I have fun and a few people using my stuff, it's okay. So 1 year later, I started to think about performance as a way to drive my work. So still remember, I have a few users at that time. Where should I invest my passion, my lust for coding? And so picking benchmarks on Stack Overflow, people complaining about Numba not being as efficient as they wanted, was a very good guess. So I collected all these kernels into a repo, and some people have been starting to use it, apart of me using that as a test bed for performance. So writing an external benchmark and something not driven by your own interest, but by the community. So Stack Overflow is some kind of independent community. If people have issue, try to find to solve them. Proved to be a very good idea. And the same year, there was this commit. Would you guess which compiler is that? No, it's not. It's someone at Dropbox. No, Piston. Or Python, I don't know how you spell that in English. So it was an internal project at Dropbox because they have a very huge Python code base and they wanted to speed up their use case and to do that in the open. So it's also a Jitting compiler. It's based on LLVM and it's very advanced in terms of Jitting technologies. They have several tiers and the tracing JITs and stuff. They re-implemented a full parser to speed up the whole process. They did a lot of things. So that's 14. The same year, I started to validate on something else than my own laptop the result of my compiler. And it seems totally normal now to have Travis validation, but at that time, before I had a friend that set up a Jenkins instance, and I was using that. And in terms of increasing the portability of my codes, it was super cool. It was a time where I started to receive issues from people trying to install it on Ubuntu. And then at that time, the C++ compiler bundled with Ubuntu was not modern enough. So I had a lot of deployment issues and testing issues, and well, CI is nice, and it already was back in the day. There was also another commit from an academic based on the email. That's another compiler. That's another Jitting compiler, but translate using C++ as an intermediate representation, just like PyTorrent does. And it was also for scientific computing, but specialized for astrophysical computation, which sounds like a good idea. You probably have your own user base in your university, and it can drive the development. That looks nice. 1 year later, the Open DreamKit project started. And it has nothing to do with PyTorrent, except that it's a European project that received a very big funding, and it happened that PyTorrent was part of this project, and so I did receive money to work on PyTorrent, which wasn't the case before. I was doing that on my free time, so it was still on my free time, but it helps saying to my wife, okay, I'm spending a lot of time on my laptop, but now we can buy a new car or whatever. No, seriously speaking, getting a funding is both cool because it's money, so you can make it cool in your own mindset. But it also means that people are interested in what you do, and it drives your development because, well, it's money against some specific developments. So for Open DreamKit, it was integration within Siphon. So in Siphon, you have now a flag that can activate PyTorrent, and so some high-level constructs from NumPy are lowered to PyTorrent constructs, and so natively, whereas in Siphon, otherwise they are just called to the NumPy library. So you get optimization of NumPy expression through that. We also made an attempt at improving the typing system, and it was a real pain, which also leads me to another bring home idea. If you can delegate the typing to another project and not have it into your own compiler, that's cool. It's much easier in Python 3 because you've got all these typing annotations, but MyPy does not support NumPy because NumPy is highly dynamic in the way it handles arrays. So if you want to model the shape as part of your typing, and you probably want to do, then you're in the dynamic world, and it does not interact in the right way with MyPy. Plus, the API of NumPy is very large, so that's in itself a very big task. Siphon delegates that decision to the user. The user explicitly gives the native type of each object, and Siphon uses that to translate Python code to native code. Numba has the information at runtime, so it also helps. We tried to implement that as a global type inference for a limited subset of Python, and it was not a very good idea. You need strong theoretical background, and again, it's a big limitation. One surprising idea that started as a joke the year after. So a GAST is officially generic IST, and it's an abstraction of the Python IST module, but for both Python 2 and Python 3 and the minor versions. It was important for PyTron because the IST is the first internal representation of PyTron. But I also presented, it's also a F word in a special language in France, in Breton. Voilà, il faut le dire. And it means basically shit or something like that. And that package happened to be downloaded a lot because it's a dependency of TensorFlow. So a Breton bad word is now used all over the world, which is a personal achievement. And the idea to take home about that project is, first, if you've got something that you can move out of your project and make a separate package, sometimes it gets some use. I had a guess it could be used, but I most certainly wanted a name. And it happens that sometimes it works. This year is also the last commit in the academic compiler Hope, which was created 2 years before. So, well, if you don't, my guess is, if you're not doing that as a hobby, you need motivation to do that. And for the academic, they had their compilers, they probably finished their project, and then the project died. Well, you need someone to feed the project at some point. And if it's not your passion, it has to be something else. I started versioning in PyTron only 3 years ago, which is very late, but it also means that people have been starting to ask for actual tagging and release in PyTron, which means that I started to have more users. That's already 3 or 4 years before I started. So once again, when it's not your job, you can take your own pace, and according to me, you can make more rightful decisions. It's also the last comment in the Python master branch. Also, it was supported by Dropbox. At some point, Dropbox decided to move to Go for their computation intensive part and just drop the whole project, and it did not survive. So again, what drives a project? If it's the industry, then you have less guarantee to some extent. I also published an article, and that's something that actually works. Publishing scientific article about your open source project help people from the scientific community know about it and use it. It's just know your field. If you're doing scientific computing, well, scientists are going to use your project and speak in their own language, and papers is a good language for them. I had an external dependency, which was Boost SEMD. It got dropped, and I had to find a new one to replace that. That was a pain, but that's how it is. I am now using Clang on, also on Windows, which is both a good thing. It means I have users on Windows, which was not expected at all at the beginning, but it happens to be true. And this year is also the last year for Python 2 for Python 2 support. So moving the code base to Python 2 from Python 2 to Python 3 is not always easy when you have a generic project, but when you are compiling a Python project, which means that the actual language you're compiling changes the semantic of your inputs, it's just like changing the format of your inputs data, and so that was super painful, and not having to maintain that is a relief. I have to acknowledge a lot of people, so first including my wife, because all the time I spend, well, coding is not time spent in the family, but well, my parents used to spend a lot of time watching TV, so at least coding is just like watching TV actively, and a lot of students, a lot of people I never met in real life, but who contribute, and that's really a good thing. When it's a hobby, you can keep it personal, and that's something I really appreciate about a pet project. And that's the conclusion. So users really matters, even if it's a toy project. When you have one people saying thank you for what you're doing, it really drives the motivation. It doesn't need to be a lot of downloaders or whatever. There is no Twitter feed for PyTrend, and I don't care. I have a few users who are using Python in the industry, and they feed me with interesting challenge, and that's nice. And that's basically it. If you have any extra question, I'm open to them, and if you don't, I'm tired, so that's okay too.
Well, actually, we're running out of time for questions, but like, if someone has one, yeah.
Could you elaborate on the last point?
On Transonic? Yeah, thank you for providing some extra time on the talk. So Transonic is a recent project, not driven by me, but by one of the former PyTrend user. And it's basically an abstraction over Numba, Siphon, and PyTrend. So you write in Transonic, which basically just provide a JIT decorator, and Transonic, and you pick your backend, and Transonic tries to convert your input code to either Siphon code or Numba code or PyTrend code, and it's just like changing the engine, and that's if it works, and the scikit image people are really fond of that project. So if we have enough traction, it just means that PyTrend will become an implementation detail of the optimization process. You say, I want to optimize that, and you can try whatever backend is implemented by Transonic and pick the one you prefer based on different properties. And so that's a common minimal layer and a very good approach, for sure, or at least from my point of view.
Thank you, Serge.